Hi, everybody. My name is Em. I am an adult child practicing being my own loving parent. Just going to take a couple breaths. I'm going to invite you to turn on your video as well. It's much nicer if I can see you, and I understand if you can't. I'd love to see your beautiful faces. Thank you. Thank you, Rich. Lots of fun as always. Glad to see so many of you here, people that I know and love, and many of you that I don't know. And I've been praying and asking my higher power to guide me for the last couple days for this share. And I think I'm going to start with just being really real. I'm staying with a 90-year-old friend, and I took her to the doctor on Wednesday and found out she had the flu. And I realized that I'd had a headache for days and I was calling it allergies. And, thinking the wind's blowing all these things in. And after she got diagnosed with the flu, I checked in with myself and I realized it was a different kind of headache. And this does tie into ACA because, like every one of us, I come from a dysfunctional family. And what that meant for me largely was that I was shut down emotionally as a child and well into my adult life, really until recent years. And it also means that I have some health issues. I remember being in one meeting, it was a women's meeting. And every single woman in the meeting had some kind of autoimmune thing going on. And so we have, as ACAs, and I'm not saying you do, but many of us as ACAs have these weird manifestations of our traumas in our body coming out as a strange illness of some kind. And, I had a goiter for 25 years. It was taken out almost 3 years ago. And about 5 years ago, I don't know the exact timeline, but somewhere around 5 years ago, I started experiencing extreme lethargy. And so I spent a lot of time resting and in bed. And then I realized, well, this isn't working. It's not getting me where I want in my life. And I want something different. Would somebody mute? Thank you. So I started pushing through. And if I didn't have a lot of energy, I just was like, I'm gonna go anyway. And so that relates to now because I'm in the process of ending a relationship that's been best relationship of my life. And I'm moving from Arizona to New Mexico. And I've been the last week and a half, 2 weeks, I've been preparing my space for a move. I've been cleaning and getting ready to paint and all of that. And so no matter how I was feeling, I was just pushing through. And when I found out that she had the flu and I checked in with myself, I was like, this is a different kind of headache than I normally get. And so I've been resting as best as I can since then. So I'm here not feeling well tonight. I have a fierce headache. I did take a naproxen at noon today, so it's on its way out, I can feel. I've been mega dosing on supplements and things to help knock whatever it is out. Marie's feeling way better today, so I have hope that it won't last too much longer. So that's good news for me. I don't know if I want to really talk about my childhood too much. Well, I will. I will. Because in the grieving process, well, let me back up a little bit. I'll talk about my ACA a little bit. So, just a tiny bit of background. I have been in ACA for the last 4 years. I've just celebrated my 4 year anniversary, the beginning of March. So, ACA is a very important program to me. And I work it in a sevenfold practice. And my sevenfold practice, the order of the things in the practice change as time goes on. So, right now, the way my sevenfold practice is working is my connection with my higher power and my connection with my inner family. And those two go hand in hand for me because one of the ways my higher power communicates with me is when all of my parts line up and give me a clear yes or a clear no, or somebody in there is unhappy and that's a no, then that's a no. So that's one of the ways my higher power communicates with me is from the inside. So I'm really grateful for that. My inner family is a constant work in progress. My relationship with all my parts is what I mean by that. It's always different. It's always evolving. I have many, many parts. And that brings me to something before ACA. I actually started meeting my inner parts in December 2015. So that's about, I don't know, 7 years, 6 or 7 years before, 8 years, something like that, before I came into ACA. So when I started meeting my inner parts, I have more parts than human parts. I have a turtle and I have a judge. And so those are both critical parent parts. And then of course I have all my ages of parts. So so those are two parts of my sevenfold practice. The third would be connection with my fellow travelers, and that ties into the workbooks because I do a lot of work with my fellow travelers. I don't do it alone. I know for me that doing this work in community is vital. I can't do it alone, and half the time I can't remember, or more than half. I don't have a lot of memories because I was so dissociated as a child and in my marriage raising my kids. So my kids will replay, they'll mention some memory or something that happened, and I'm like, I don't really remember that. But then as I listen and I try and bring myself back, I am able to bring myself back, but it doesn't necessarily pop immediately. I find the workbooks to be a key in working the literature as a whole. I worked the yellow book right away. It took, well, it wasn't even right away. It was probably about a year after I was in. It took about a year. I started that with a group of like seven people, ended with three. Then I had wanted to do the Loving Parent Guidebook first. Because I was like already connected with some of my inner family. I already had relationships with them, but that's not what I was guided to do. So I've listened to my higher power and the inner guidance every step of the way. After the Yellow Book, I did the Traits Workbook. I did that with a group of, we started, I think, with nine and ended with seven. It was a really, really solid group. I consider those people in a very special way because we've done a lot of really deep work together. We spent about a year and a half or 2 years doing that. I have started the Loving Parent Guidebook with one single fellow traveler, and that work is incredibly slow for us. At first, my kids, my inner teens, all my inners were like, "This is too slow," because we were like reading one sentence and reflecting. And so we sped it up a little bit. And then something happened in me, and I settled into the rhythm of trust and trusting the process and not needing it to be a certain way. I didn't have to have results, because this is about the process for me. It's not about getting to an end. What I realized after I did the Yellow Book the first time was it wasn't super deep for me. It was moderately deep. And now I realized that it was okay to do it that way because I'd come back to it at some point. And I'm actually in a big Red book club, and we're currently on the steps. We're on step four, and that's been taking us as a group a really long time. And that's a really deep group as well. I'm grateful that that group has been in person with me moving. I'll have to do it on Zoom instead of in person. I have some sadness about that. There's a lot of grief in my life right now. And we're choosing, both of us, to end this relationship in the form that it's in now, not necessarily forever, but in the form that it's in now, because we both separately have come to realize that some of our own internal patterns that are happening together are not serving us as individuals. And we feel we need more space. And I'm reminded of that old Sting song, "If you love someone, set them free. Free, free, set them free." And I remember when I heard that song as a teenager, I was like, yes, that's the truth. And I knew it was a truth. But living it is freaking hard. It's really hard. Letting go and changing form with somebody that I deeply care about and can say it's been the best relationship of my life, and they can say the same thing. It's way harder than walking away from a relationship where I'm like angry, pissed off, done. That was way easier. That's how I left my ex-husband of 20 years, four children. I was angry. I was done. I just wanted freedom. But this is a completely different thing. We're doing the modern conscious uncoupling. We're trying to stay as conscious as possible, take responsibility for our own parts, our own feelings, without blame or shame or guilt, simply with love and acceptance. And it is really, really challenging. The other thing about grief and feelings in general is that when I start uncovering feelings, because I lived a life of numb, other feelings, it's kind of like water. If you have, when you have like one droplet of water and you put another drop near it, they're attracted to each other. Well, feelings are kind of the same way. And so, like, I'm feeling a present feeling or a series of feelings called grief. And the feelings of grief from my childhood that I haven't felt have been coming out. And in fact, my friend here in New Mexico, she said to me when I first got here a couple weeks ago, she was like, "Em, it seems like you're feeling the feelings of a lifetime." And I had to just sit with that quietly with myself and be with it, because I didn't quite know what it meant. And as I stayed with it, I realized something really big. A really big realization happened. And what I realized was that I have some sadness and shame about this, and it's really real. My mom never accepted me the way I was. And for all my youth and into my adult life, I was trying to get her approval. I tried anything. I tried cutting parts of myself off. And my teenager came along, and my teenager was like, "Well, she's not going to accept us. So we may as well do things to give her reasons not to accept us." So my teenage rebel has been running my life. And there's sadness because that's a reaction. It's a reaction to somebody else. Yes, that someone else was somebody that I genuinely wanted love and approval far from and didn't get. And yet, that reaction of being the rebel of, I don't know how else to say it, basically saying, fuck you to my mom for not accepting me and giving her reasons not to accept me, kept me from living my truth. So part of what I've been grieving, as I'm grieving the loss or change of this relationship, is the loss of my life and living my truth, because I spent 40 years being a rebel and doing things to give my mom reasons to disapprove of me. And when she said to me in her last year of life, "You're not honoring thy father and thy mother," you know, like from the Ten Commandments, she was right. She was right. And when she said that to me, I was like, "What are you even talking about?" And that's my teen rebel reacting yet again. And so, I'm coming to terms with that. And part of how that rebel showed up was taking on my dad's characteristics and traits, some of his unhealthy ones. And in the relationship with my parents, my mom was super controlling, like extremely controlling, controlling everything and everyone she came in contact with, every situation. And if she didn't get her way, she was reactive. I remember her blowing up in stores and on the phone with people if they did things differently than she thought they should go. She was really volatile. She'd never faced her own emotions, and so they'd come out sideways. And while I can recognize that and have compassion for it, there's also a lot of hurt there. She never took responsibility for her feelings. She'd have an outburst like that, and she would feel better as soon as it was out. And she wouldn't notice that she'd left a tidal wave and hurt whatever was in the way or in the proximity. And so I can recognize that today. And it doesn't make it right. It just allows me to understand what happened. And she has reasons that she was like that and that she didn't want to face her emotions and her feelings. Where she came from, it's completely understandable to me. Her biological father committed suicide when she was 3. She never even asked questions or wanted to talk about it with anybody ever. And I can say part of the reason was that her mother was really angry and resentful and probably not a happy person. She'd already had to leave Germany in the life of luxury to escape Hitler's Nazi Germany. I come from a Jewish family. And my great grandfather was wise enough to leave Germany in time to save their lives. But they went from a ready-to-wear dress factory to a chicken farm. So my grandmother had to go from, they had a car, they had a Mercedes in the 30s, fancy clothes, maids. My grandma remembered opening the drawers of the dress factory and looking at all these silver buttons. And going from that lifestyle, and maids, of course, going from that lifestyle to New Jersey in a chicken farm, and she had to chop chickens' heads off and pluck the feathers of chickens. There's a lot of resentment for a teenager that had to go from one lifestyle to the other. And that's not even the part of leaving her homeland, leaving her friends, leaving everything she knew. So she came with that history, then married a man she barely knew. A German man who went off to war as in the American army, and he was basically a spy because he spoke German. So he went back to his homeland, saw his friends now as Nazis, and had to like be tattling on them basically. So what a messy situation. And then he came back to the States. My grandmother said she only knew him long enough to get pregnant twice. He wasn't around enough. And he came home after the war, and I guess he got in a car accident and killed somebody. And that was the last straw for him. He shot himself in the head. So I found all that out from my aunt, not my mom. My mom never told me. My mom never was willing to face it. So when I was a little girl, and I was having feelings, she didn't want any part of it. I was called a moody child, and my sister was called the happy one. And I was called a moody child because I had feelings and I was being real. And she couldn't face her feelings. So me having feelings reminded her of that, which made her, I think, resent me in a lot of ways. And I became the family scapegoat. My sister was the family hero, and a strange realization has come to pass. When my mom died a few years ago, it'll be 3 years coming up here in June. She died pretty quickly of pancreatic cancer, like less than 2 months. And afterwards, my sister cut me out of the mourning process and the condolence calls, and yet kept the look good family image going by signing my name on all the thank you cards. So I had a lot of anger and resentment for being excluded from that process. And what I've come to realize in this last few months, she didn't show up for my son's birthday brunch. And she's never had any kids or been married. And so, really, all she and my mom was her person. So, all she really has left, she has my dad, but my dad's, he pretty much lives in victim. He's a child, even though he's 84 years old. So she really, my sister really only has my kids left for her. And yet she didn't show up at my son's birthday brunch because I was in town. And she didn't want to have anything to do with me. And what I realized after that was that I believe, and I won't know, she's not talking to me. She hasn't talked to me. Since the summer my mom died. When she moved out of the house, she'd been living with my parents for 4.5 years, And when she and my dad moved out of the house, she said, "You'll never know where I live. You'll never be invited. And I'm never talking to you again." And that's held true. But what I came to realize is that she's honoring my mom. I suspect, again, I won't know for sure, but I suspect my story is she's honoring my mom by keeping me out and not having a relationship with me. It's some really weird, sick way of keeping the trauma drama going on instead of finding a way to heal or really taking responsibility to move herself out of victim. So it's super sad. I wish her well. I wanted her to come to the birthday brunch, even though I was there, even though she's not talking to me, even though it would have made things more awkward. I still wanted her to come because I want her to be able to step out of her own trauma and drama and ACA life. And I told her about ACA while my mom was still alive and we were living in the same town. I did my best to befriend her. I invited her to events and things, and I believe she actually used the things that I was telling her to bolster her hero status in the family and keep my scapegoat also bolstered. So anyway, lots of trauma and drama that continues in the family. It doesn't go away if you don't do the work. And I'm grateful to be doing the work because what I can say is when I came into this program 4 years ago, I did not have any relationship with any of my children. And I was completely heartbroken. I was living in the same town as two of my kids. And they were having, and my mom, my dad, and my sister were also living in the same town. They were having events, and I was excluded from them. And living in the same town, I was just completely devastated. That's what brought me to ACA. And what I can say now is I have relationships with three out of four of my kids. And I'm so grateful. I get to spend time with my two new granddaughters. They will be 2 and 4 coming up the end of this month and beginning of May. Their birthdays are 2 weeks apart. And my daughter actually invited me to come stay with her husband and the girls while she goes on a girls' trip with her best friend to Greece. So I feel honored to have that kind of relationship with my daughter. She also calls me a few times a week just to check in and to download and let go of whatever's on her heart in the moment. I'm one of her confidants. And that's pretty extraordinary after actually 2 cycles of not talking to my kids. After I split from my ex-husband, I went through a phase where none of the kids were talking to me. And then again, when I moved to the same town. So I'm grateful for my relationships with my kids, and I'm only going to talk about that one daughter because she has the grandbabies. My oldest daughter is not speaking to me. I have a grandson that I'm not allowed to speak to, which is completely devastating. I spent quite a bit of time with him in his first 4 years. I lived with them for a little bit in his first year of life. I was one of his primary caretakers when he was 4. And all I can do for that daughter is pray. The stories she has created about me, I have come to believe are because of her own traumas and her own unwillingness to look at herself. So it's easier to blame than to look inside. And I know that to be true from my own experiences. I'd rather blame somebody than take responsibility. That was a pattern of my life. And I really don't want to do that anymore. And I work really hard at noticing when I'm blaming somebody and going, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, that means three fingers are pointed back at me. What's my responsibility here? Or what behavior is similar or opposite or something like that. So I'm doing the work all the time. So the other three parts of my sevenfold practice are meetings, service, and integration. Meetings were the thing that got me into the program and kept me in the program. And service. As soon as I jumped into meetings, I also jumped into service. One of the things that my mom gave me, and the whole matriarchal line of my family, all the women in my family, are very much of service. They're people of service. And so I can appreciate that on one hand, and I also have to watch so that I'm not giving too much. I have to give to me first and take care of me first. That airline thing, put your own oxygen mask on first. It's true. I have to take care of me first before I can take care of other people. So I did a ton of service. I had a home meet, have a home meeting. I'm still part of the home meeting, and some of my people from that meeting are here, and I thank you for being here tonight. And I've stepped back from service. I did service for a solid 3 years in that meeting. I did service in another meeting simultaneously. And I also was the co-chair for the Arizona Retreat in the Pines for 2 years. I'm still on that committee, though this year I took a smaller role. I am only in charge of workshops. So I'm the workshops coordinator. So if you have a workshop that you would like to share with people at a retreat in Arizona. We have about 130 people that show up on top of Mingus Mountain. It's pretty great. I welcome you, and I'll put flyers in at the announcement time of the meeting. So service is great, and I have to watch that I'm not overgiving. And then integration. We don't talk about that a lot in this program, and it's a really important piece. And I got quiet because quiet is a representation of integration to me. I have to be quiet and I have to practice. If I'm going to, 5, 10 meetings a week, is that a distraction? Or is it filling a void? Or is it actually allowing me something? And I'm not judging you if that's what you're doing. I'm just know for me. If I'm doing too much, I'm not giving myself time to integrate. It's with when we breathe, we have an inhale and we have an exhale. They're both important. So I can work, 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 but then I need time to practice what I've learned. And so that's a very important part of my recovery as well. So that's my sevenfold practice. I talked to you about my rebel and the grief. I actually feel pretty complete. Thanks for letting me share, y'all. Glad to be here.